lighting manufacturer. Started it in 2002. Did my first private equity exit in 12. Did my second private equity exit in 17. Stayed on with the company through 20. We've all heard the story of an entrepreneur who just has a bad taste for private equity, hates the people that bought their business. And I think all of that friction comes from the expectations that are set between the entrepreneur and the private equity buyer before the deal gets done. Private equity is built on a lot of winners. They have to have a very high success rate in their investments to be successful. The first thing, and I can't emphasize this enough, don't hire the wrong investment banker.
Joining us today is Jason Hendren. Now, Jason has a bit of a different background. He founded an organization, grew that business, sold it to private equity, stayed on with that organization, sold again to a different private equity firm, and then ran that business up until the big COVID in 2020. So Jason, if you could give us a 60 to 90 second breakdown of you, please.
Yeah, thank you for that. I am an exit planning advisor, which means that I help entrepreneurs pretty much tee their business up for an exit, make the moves now that are going to set them up for success at some point in the future when they decide to monetize the equity value of that business. I learned how to do this. I was an entrepreneur. I owned energy efficient lighting manufacturer, started it in 2002, did my first private equity exit in 12, did my second private equity exit in 17, stayed on with the company through 20. And throughout that whole experience was heavily involved in M&A, bought multiple companies, looked at more than I could ever count, had many under contract to buy that fell apart for various different reasons. That was kind of like a master's level education in really understanding what it means to monetize a business. So in my current practice, I take all those lessons that I learned. Prior to that, I'm a manufacturing engineer by trade. My background is in primarily flat sheet metalworking, but I've spent a ton of time on ERP systems and managing data and scheduling and optimizing to data within a manufacturing environment. Then I transitioned that all throughout my career as I built my factory and ultimately had all the success with the company that I started.
Congratulations for you, two private equity exits and on a business that you founded yourself, which is pretty rare to stay on and complete the rounds from there. So certainly congratulations. I'm sure there's lots we can learn here. As you've worked as an operator selling to private equity and then extensively working with private equity in a back setting, what advice would you give to private equity professionals to be able to better engage with their management teams?
I think the number one thing is we've all heard the story of an entrepreneur who just has a bad taste for private equity, hates the people that bought their business. And I think all of that friction comes from the expectations that are set between the entrepreneur and the private equity buyer before the deal gets done. I was working on a deal with a client recently where the buyers were all excited about their participation in the deal, about their leadership, about the strategy going forward. And a condition of the deal was a very meaningful reinvestment from this entrepreneur. Within 90 days of the deal being done, the entrepreneur was told that he wasn't going to be the CEO of it anymore. And he comes to me and says, well, what can I do? I'm like, well, there's nothing you can do. He's like, but I invested millions of dollars in this deal because I was betting on me. And now I've been ripped away, which I think is the worst decision you can make. And I said, there's nothing you can do. In all of your documents, you gave up control of the business. And in doing so, you put yourself in a position where the private equity group is going to call the shots on the management team. And really, their only commitment to you is in the equity documents of how your ownership is held. And that's one of the things that, you know, I write about in the book as far as setting the goals for yourself after you do an exit, so that you have that next stage of your life planned, because that transition can happen very quickly and it can happen in a very unexpected manner.
Disappointing to hear about, big advocate of private equity, and yeah, certainly difficult to swallow that for the executive coming in.
I tell people all the time, private equity is built on a lot of winners. They have to have a very high success rate in their investments to be successful. You see a firm in their third, fourth, fifth fund, they know what they're doing. They'll have a miss here and there. And those are the stories you hear about. Those are the entrepreneurs that are going to have something where there was some friction in that relationship or some unhappiness. But by and large, those private equity professionals typically nail it. Those funds do really well. They provide a great return for their LPs and their GPs, and they are right much more than they are wrong. So you were talking about nibbling around the edges here. You know, I think private equity professionals by and large do a great job, but the one thing that they could do is really managing that relationship on the way in.
So your advisory now works with companies to support them with exit processes. So what advice would you give to chief executive CFOs and the rest of the C-suite on how they can improve their exit strategy?
So, you know, the first thing, I can't emphasize this enough, don't hire the wrong investment banker. I mean, you know, I tell entrepreneurs and I try to, you know, kind of create this metaphor for them. If you had a mansion, would you hire somebody to sell it who typically sells apartments and condos? No, you wouldn't. You would hire somebody that knew how to sell a mansion, something of that scale, and they would also know how to sell something in your neighborhood. The worst thing, I think the worst time spent by an entrepreneur is training their investment banker about their business and their industry. That investment banker should walk in with that knowledge. When I work with any of my entrepreneurs, I look for investment bankers that have sold businesses that look like theirs and at a similar size to theirs as much as possible. So when I bring an investment banker in, that investment banker is telling me about the buyers in that market and the appetite and the multiples, and they're giving us information that we don't have access to. I want to find the investment bankers who can come in and say, yeah, I just did a deal in the last 6 months. It is in this industry, which is very similar to yours. The buyers were paying up for this, paying down for this. And then you can take that information and say, okay, are there tweaks that we want to make to this business to get a higher multiple? You know, when I was getting ready to sell my business in 2017, we brought an investment banker in probably 18 months before we actually took the business to market. And at that time, this was when the transition from fluorescent to LED lighting was happening. And his advice was threefold. He said, one, you want to sell at $10 million of EBITDA, so do everything you can to get there. Two, you want to manage your percentage of LED sales. If you can get over 50% LED versus incumbent older technologies, that's going to look better for you. And three, get as close to 40% gross margin as you can, because the closer you get to 40% gross margin, you get out of commodity world and you get into specialty world. So, okay, so now I've got three action-oriented KPIs to strive towards. And then it was every board meeting was what percentage of LED, what was our gross margins, and then what was our trailing 12 EBITDA, forecasting that to see if, you know, getting to 10 was in the realm of possibility for us, and challenging the sales team to help us get there. That was the strategy, but it came from the investment bankers because they knew what the buyers were paying up for. So the number one thing I would advise folks, don't just sign an investment banker because it's somebody you met at a local conference, someone you have a relationship with, someone you're in a networking group with. Get an investment banker that can teach you about your industry, not the other way around. The second thing I would say is be really thoughtful about employee alignment. Make sure that your employees are aligned with your desires to exit the business, whether it's a hired CEO that you brought in, your CFO. For God's sakes, don't ever keep anything from your CFO. Bring them under the tent and make sure that they have incentives that align them with your desires. If you don't have enough upside in the deal to provide bonus plans or some type of an incentive for your employees, then you probably should put your deal off for a year or two and keep growing until you can, because you don't want any of those key executives leaving in the middle of a process because it could throw everything off the rails and set you back 2 years.
Pretty good advice. So if we look at that investment banking side, what we're looking for is somebody that's bringing value to you as an executive, as an organization, and giving you insights into deals they've done previously in similar and same industries. Knowledge on the market and very clear. You know, everyone obviously follows an EBITDA number, but you know, there's going to be nuances such as the LED lighting percentage, the old technology of the fluorescence, etc., to run through. So you're getting somebody that's saying, these are the things that you're going to need to do because we've done this in previous deals. And that's what's critical.
Absolutely. I mean, I could give you example after an example, but like one client that I was working with had a construction-oriented business that had a portion of the business, new construction, a portion of it is service. We learned that buyers value service higher than they value new construction because they feel like, you know, as an example, if you sell air conditioning in Florida, when the air conditioning breaks, you're going to pay to get the air conditioning fixed. So it doesn't matter what the economy is doing or what the interest rates are, you're going to get your AC fixed. And we took that information to really think about how we package the business and put our foot forward. the service side of the business and actually ramped up the investment in that side a year before we went to market, and that paid dividends. Similarly, I have another business that is a SaaS business, software related, profitable. But when I brought in software salespeople that weren't necessarily selling to private equity, but were selling to more maybe publicly traded or big VC backed funds, they talked to us about how you metric that business differently. And previous to us making that outreach, they were working with a traditional banker that was looking at it as an EBITDA multiple. So again, I want the investment banker to teach us about the industry, not the other way around.
So your book you've written post, obviously, all the experience of working with private equity is titled The Things I Wish I Knew Before I Sold to Private Equity. So you've already shared a little bit of that with that kind of expectations and relationship side. What are the kind of top three things as an insight to the book that you wish that you knew before you sold to PE?
Yeah, so the first one has to do about personal goal setting. When you're an entrepreneur and you go down that path, you need to have a good, honest conversation with yourself that this could go bad quickly. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, but you need to prepare yourself in case it does. And if you find yourself that either you're forcibly removed from the company or that you're just deeply unhappy with the partnership that emerged post deal, you need to have a next stage of your life planned, whether it's philanthropy, family, another business, whatever it is that you think you're going to be post this deal, whether it's 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, you probably should start getting a plan around that. I know for myself, when I left the business in the beginning of 20, I was immediately hit with COVID. So I had all of my plans that I got smacked in the face. I went from being a full-time executive to having all these travel plans. And once I had all my travel plans and all the things that I wanted to do, COVID smacked me in the face, and it was really a crisis of character. And it really kind of propelled me into finishing the book and doing some other things. So when I work with entrepreneurs on a sale, I'm like, okay, you know, think about what happens if this goes sideways. Is the money going to be enough? And do you have your life planned? A couple of other things I would add in there, just some basic building blocks of exiting. You need to have a team around you that brings expertise that you don't have outside of the business. For one, have somebody that does your wills and estate planning and have all that done before you do an exit. You want that money protected and moved into an estate while you're still on a clear day and there's no issues out there. You want to have a lawyer who can handle equity transactions. I've had equity transactions fall apart because they brought in a family law or a personal friend. You want somebody who has done those types of deals with private equity. You also need to have an employment lawyer. If you're going to have an employment contract or any of your employees are going to have an employment contract, an equity plan, they need to be represented independently of who's representing the company and their sale. You want that employee lawyer working for them on their behalf, and it is something that that you should pay for. And lastly, I am a big believer in financial planning, having that financial planner in your life when it's done right. Sometimes, maybe too often, it's done wrong. But when financial planning is done right and you have a good relationship with somebody and they understand your spending habits, they understand your long-term needs, they understand your family dynamics, and you come to them and say, at my age, where my kids, where my family, where my parents, where all this stuff tees up, this is going to be my after-tax proceeds. Is this enough? Do I need to be thinking about working on my resume after my deal, or am I in, you know, the good life mode and I could take my foot off the accelerator? Again, I'm a big believer in that. My financial planner supports me, you know, A to Z. And we talk a lot about spending and longevity and philanthropy and all the different things that we want to do. I think that's a huge relationship to have in your life. And I talk a lot in the book about how that's the person who's going to tell you go, no go on deals you evaluate.
So what are your influences, Jason? What do you read? What do you watch? What do you listen to? I know you've said you're a big follower of podcasts, but what would you recommend that others should check out?
There's good books out there. I think mine is one of them. I do like Adam Coffey's book. I know he was a guest on your podcast. I like the book Buy Then Build. I like the concept there. But for myself, on a day-to-day basis, you know, I start my day with the New York Times Daily every day. Just, hey, I want to know what's going on in the world. I do listen to several of the New York Times podcasts, including Hard Fork, which is a tech podcast. The one podcast that I listen to absolutely religiously, never miss, is the All In podcast. Kind of ironic that I'm more of a private equity guy and working with post-profit companies and they're all VC guys, but really gives me kind of insights on a lot of stuff. I enjoy that one. I like a lot of the Economist podcasts. I like The Intelligence. I like Checks and Balances. So I kind of just, you know, between all of those, try to keep myself informed about what's going on in the world, in politics and in business, and kind of use that to inform my decisions as I work with my clients.
And Jason, if anybody wishes to reach out to you post this podcast, how best do they get in touch, please?
My website is hendrenba.com. So H-E-N-D-R-E-N-B-A for business advisors. Find me on LinkedIn, Jason Hendren, H-E-N-D-R-E-N. And any of those, you can instant message me, send me an email, drop me a line. Happy to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us, Jason. You gave us a real insight into obviously your extensive experience in founding a business, growing that business, selling to private equity, staying on, selling again to another private equity firm, and such an impressive journey. And now you work on supporting businesses with the difficult process of actually selling, which is what private equity is all about. So thank you very much for joining us, and thanks for sharing all that you have done.
Great. Thank you for having me.
And as always, for our listeners, thank you very much for joining us. Should you ever need support with private equity professional hiring or portfolio executive hiring across Europe and North America, please do reach out to us at Royal Selection. And if you've not already done so, please do subscribe, as all podcasts now come up weekly on the Private Equity Podcast. But till the next time, keep smashing it. And thank you very much for listening.